This is a rebroadcast of Migrant Matters. You're listening to CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph.
What is communism?
Poverty.
What is communism?
Dictatorship.
What is communism?
Hunger.
The myths around communism. Brendan from Guelph Youth Communist League uncovered the myths around communism in an interview with Koba. Please stay tuned on CFRU 93.3 FM to listen to this interview. Hello, this is CFRU 93.3 FM in Guelph. My name is Koba. I am here at University of Guelph. The University of Guelph, as part of its Disorientation Week, has arranged tabling event. In this tabling event, Guelph Young Communist League also put a table and showcasing their goals, platform, policies and values to the incoming students and the returning students, and of course to the faculties. I am nearby this table and I am talking to Mr. Brenton. He's an active member of Young Communist League. Hello, Mr. Brenton.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Not bad.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel about this weather? Nice?
It's nice, absolutely. There's a bit of a wind, you know.
Mm-hmm. So tell me, what are you doing here?
So as you mentioned, we're here for Disorientation Week at the University of Guelph, which is sort of a week when the progressive organizations on campus, or a week early in the semester when the progressive organizations on campus sort of come out and advertise themselves, and I'm here representing the Young Communist League.
Oh, is this a university-based organization? Or?
No, this is put on mostly by OPERG here at the university.
Mm-hmm. Tell us something about your party. You belong to the political party, or are you just an organization that promote communist values?
We are politically tied to the Communist Party of Canada. We support the Communist Party of Canada. Many members of our organization are members of the party. I'm not personally at this point. But we definitely try to work together, and we do support them.
Okay. So you are not a member of the political party, but you are a member of this
Young Communist League.
Okay. And you work together, right?
Yes.
Collaboratively. Okay, good. What values you are promoting?
So I guess the basic values that we're promoting are solidarity and social justice and equality and peace. Those are basically the values that that we think should be predominant in society, and we see communism as the means of realizing that.
Okay, you are working together with the Communist Party. What are their values? What do they want to bring to the community?
We share those values with the Communist Party of Canada. The basic goal of the Communist Party of Canada is to establish a socialist society in Canada.
Okay, you said you want to establish socialist society in the
yes.
community, but you are working towards communism.
Yes.
Why you say you want to establish socialism?
Because socialism and communism are two distinct historical stages. And the initial stage, and this is something that's been realized in history, where the working class has overthrown capitalism, and has taken political and economic power, and is starting to build a society in its own interest based on its own needs, that we describe as socialism. And then what we believe will eventually develop out of that society over a long period of time is a communist society where there are no longer any classes and there is no longer a state, and the society basically functions out of cooperation and solidarity among its members.
It has been commonly accused of capitalist countries that they are providing misleading information to their citizens about communism and socialism so that they can keep their power and bring hatred within the society about communism and socialist. What are the myths that are spread around in the community about communism and socialism?
That's a very good question. I think there are sort of a few myths that are kind of the most powerful ones and the most reoccurring ones. One of those is that people in socialist societies do not have political freedom. The communists want to take political freedom away from people and create a society where a tiny group of people, or one individual even, the sort of caricature of the communist dictator, where one individual has all the power in society and people have no political rights and no political freedom. Another, and this is connected to it, is that in socialist or communist societies, there's no individuality and everyone has to sort of behave the same way in this very sort of standardized fashion in their everyday life. And probably the third sort of really important myth is that socialism and communism as economic systems don't work, and that if you put those systems in place, your country won't be able to develop and everyone will live in poverty.
Mm-hmm. So you explained about the myths. What's the reality?
The reality in all of those cases is very, very different. And when you look at the historical record of socialist societies that have existed and socialist societies that exist in the world today, it's not hard to see that. In socialist countries like Cuba, there's a system that is a political system that's vastly more democratic than the political system that exists in Canada. Instead of people electing sort of very distant representatives who are, you know, mostly wealthy professional people, you have, and who ultimately serve, you know, the interests of large corporations. What you have in a socialist country like Cuba is a system where the people being elected to the national legislature are elected basically at the community level, and they're elected by their friends and neighbors, and there are no professional politicians in Cuba. If you get elected to the legislature, you're still doing your job. You're still a farmer or a teacher or a bus driver or whatever. And there are many working people, like there are many working class people in the Cuban legislature. But in any case, people are not cut off from their communities. They're not cut off from their work. And mm-hmm. we see the results of this has in that in Cuba, approximately half of the members of the legislature, for example, are women. And the Afro-Cuban minority has a lot more political representation and political power than racially oppressed groups do in North America. So that's one example. And if you look at other socialist countries, if you look at the Soviet Union historically, the socialist states in Eastern Europe, what you find is that these structures exist where people can exercise power over their communities at the local level. And very importantly, in sharp contrast to capitalism, people can exercise power in their workplaces. There's a plan that sort of sets the broad determinants of the economy, but then within that, workers can decide on a wide variety of things in terms of hours, in terms of the pace of work, in terms of how jobs are assigned, and that allows people to create decent and humane working conditions for themselves. Whereas under capitalism, working people have absolutely no power over that at all. So the idea that people are less free in socialist societies is absolutely false. And the idea that people have to live, you know, in the same way is just, it's cartoonish. You can see that in socialist societies, people do have the opportunity to do different things with their lives. And in most of the history of socialist societies, there's been full employment, which gives people a wide variety of choices in terms of what they want to do professionally with their lives. So in that aspect, that's absolutely a myth. And the idea that socialist economies don't work can be pretty much taken care of just by looking at the economic statistics that even organizations like the World Bank or UN bodies have put out. And you can see through the entire history of the 20th century when there were socialist societies, and in the socialist societies that still exist, socialist countries do not have recessions. Mm-hmm. The Soviet economy grew continuously from 1928 to 1985, except during the Second World War. So there's no recessions, and economic growth, the benefits of economic growth, are actually distributed in such a way that you don't have the situation that we can have where the economy is growing, but working people are not doing any better, where profits are getting higher, but wages are not. In a socialist economy based on people's needs, economic development always actually comes back to working people in the form of better quality social services and a higher quality of life.
And it always put people first, right?
Yes, that is the basic principle.
Mm-hmm. I also think that communism principle will promote the environmental justice as well, because in a capitalist country, you want to exploit as much resources that is available to you. And if you don't have the resources, you go to your neighbor, neighboring countries and beyond to get the resources and make more products, exploit them and make more profit. You are motivated to use to exploit more resources and emit carbon, emit pollutants in the environment and create disaster to the earth we are living. Can you expand on that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really, really good point. And I think the crucial issue there is the crucial difference between capitalism and socialism as economic systems that creates that difference in impacts on the environment is that capitalism is not planned. We talk about the anarchy of production. So you just have, you know, under capitalism, you have individual competing firms trying to guess how much of their products they're going to need to produce and how much of their products they're going to be able to sell profitably. And there's continually an incentive, because they're competing with each other, to produce more and more and more. And we simply don't live on a planet where resources are infinite. And we don't live on a planet where infinite growth is possible in the sense that it happens under capitalism. And you get into the situation where, you know, a great example in Canada, the capitalist fishing industry basically wiped out cod on the east coast of Canada. Whereas under socialism, what you try to do, there's a planned economy, and you try to make the most scientific evaluation possible of what the society's needs are, of what people actually need, and then production happens on the basis of that. So you can plan into the future. You can make decisions about preserving crucial resources that will continue to be needed into the future in a way that a capitalist firm that has to make a profit every single year and that wants to make a larger profit than it did last year simply can't. Capitalists can't really think in the long term.
Mm-hmm.
But in a planned socialist economy, long-term thinking is possible, and it's very important.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point. In terms of social classes, discrimination, social injustices, what can you tell about the benefits or disadvantages of communism or socialism versus capitalism?
Well, that's another very good question. So, I mean, we can look around us and see a capitalist society that is just, you know, pervaded by injustice and social inequality everywhere. You have an enormous disparity of wealth, and you have a tiny minority of people who hold all economic and political power. And then you have all manner of systems of oppression. There's the oppression of women. There's the oppression of queer people. There's racial and national oppression. In a capitalist society like Canada, you know, we live in a capitalist society that was built on colonialism. We have the oppression of indigenous people. We have the oppression of people of African descent. We have the oppression of migrant groups from Asia. We have, sexual and gender oppression of queer and trans people in this society. And that's the pattern when you look at any capitalist society in the world. It's filled with these inequalities. And in socialist societies, it's not the opposite. Socialist societies have never been perfect in this regard, but the gains that have been made are absolutely amazing. The Russian Empire, first country on earth to have a socialist revolution, was a colonial empire where the Russian nation was the dominant nation, and all the other dozens of nations who lived in the Russian Empire were horribly oppressed. And in the Soviet Union, those groups had the right to self-determination. They had political power where they lived. There was enormous efforts made to invest in regions that had been impoverished by colonialism so that the colonized people could have an equal material quality of life, an equal standard of living to the Russian people and to the people in the western part of the Soviet Union. People were finally allowed to get an education in their own languages. Indigenous languages were promoted in terms of the arts and culture. In some cases, and this happened both in the Soviet Union and in China, languages that had never been written down before had writing systems created for them by, you know, linguists working for the socialist state so that members of these communities could be educated in their own languages. If you look at the situation of women in virtually any society where socialism has been put in place, whether you're talking about China or Korea or Vietnam or countries in Eastern Europe before they had socialism, it was, you know, a really, really drastic situation of oppression. And in many of these societies, women, up until the time of the revolutions, were essentially at the status of property. And socialist revolutions gave women full legal equality well before capitalist democracy in the West did. But more than legal equality, women in socialist societies have actually had substantial economic opportunities that have been substantially equal to men in terms of education, in terms of professional advancement. Socialist societies have almost always had extensive public childcare, which makes an enormous material difference in the lives of women. And so what I think we can say in general is that while socialism does not automatically eliminate these systems of oppression, socialism creates a basis for doing that, and so you see far more progress on these issues than you do in any capitalist society.
Mm-hmm. You said Russia had a colonial power over the surrounding nations. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. But I know personally that didn't influence the equal participation in politics and other leadership roles in the Union. For example, Stalin, he's not a Russian, he's a Gruzian. Mm-hmm. And he came to power and still he managed everybody equally and fairly. Yeah, there are some criticism about him, mostly from the Western powers, maybe yes. Because they don't want the people to appreciate the benefits of socialism or communism. But I have been in Russia for 6 years. Mm-hmm. I talked to many seniors there, and all of them said nice things about their previous economy. They said we never had communism, we had only socialism. Lenin wanted to establish communism, but before he was able to achieve success, he was dead. And they are very dissatisfied that their socialist political system was changed to marketing economy.
Yeah.
Yeah. As a result, they are suffering a lot of poverty than before. Those seniors said, we didn't know what is poverty before. Except in the during the World War II time. We had trust on the government. The government will not betray us, and the government will not take away the social security system from us. But suddenly they changed to marketing economy, and we lost the value of money, and most of us became poor. That is the story I heard when I was in Russia. We have been talking about socialism and communism frequently. It's very difficult for some people to understand the difference between socialism and communism.
Yes.
Can you explain on that?
Sure. So this is an analysis that goes back to Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. It goes back to the founding of the Marxist tradition, and then it's sort of been refined later. So the basic difference between socialism and communism is, so socialism is the historical stage where the working class has taken power, the economy has become sort of has come under the collective control of the working class, and society is now being run, being governed in the interest of the working class. But classes still exist, and crucially, the state still exists.
Mm-hmm.
Communism, and that is a stage that dozens of countries around the world reached in the 20th century. And that is the stage that countries like Cuba are in today. Mm. Communism is something that we have yet to see in history. Communism is a stage that develops out of socialism, where classes no longer exist and the state no longer exists. Mm. Now, the fundamental reason that communism hasn't been reached, other than the fact that, well, there are a few reasons. The first is that there are certain sort of ideological and cultural changes that need to happen for a communist society to be able to function the way a communist society is supposed to, which is that people basically perform, you know, labor for society out of a very high level of consciousness and sort of kind of voluntarily do things for the benefit of society. But every socialist society has been made by people who were raised under capitalism and who have the ideas and values of capitalism in their heads. And there's a long struggle in every socialist society to change the way people think and the way people understand the world. And the other aspect is that they couldn't get rid of the state because every socialist society has faced the constant threat of attack from the imperialist countries and from counter-revolution. So they still needed that organized body in order to protect the gains that had been made.
Mm-hmm. Good explanation. We touched something about the poverty associated with socialist countries and communist countries.
Yeah.
Mostly Western countries give that message that the poverty is very high in socialist and communist countries. Communism only create poverty like that. What is your view on that?
I think that's absolutely false. And I think if you compare socialist countries and capitalist countries from the same starting point in terms of level of economic development, what you find is that the material quality of life for people is vastly higher in socialist countries. Almost every socialist revolution has taken place in a country that was poor to start with. So it's always been dishonest. This is something that capitalist propaganda will do. It's always been dishonest to compare socialist countries with the wealthiest capitalist countries on Earth, like the United States or Western Europe. That's what they do. But what it's more reasonable to do is to compare socialist countries with poor capitalist countries. And in the 1980s, there was a couple of American sociologists who tried to do this in a systematic way. And what they found was, the results that they found were things like the average life expectancy for people in a capitalist country at the poorest stage was, I think, at that time around 40. Mm-hmm. And in socialist countries at the poorest stage was, I think, 65. Mm-hmm. I think that's a good example. If you're really comparing like with like, what you find is that in socialist societies, because resources are actually devoted to meeting people's needs, resources are devoted to making sure everyone has health care, everyone has education, everyone has work and housing, that conditions are far, far better than in most capitalist countries on Earth. Because, of course, most capitalist countries on Earth are not like Canada. They're not wealthy. Most capitalist countries in the world are poor. So when the comparison is made in that way, which I think is the fair way to make it, then those are the results that you get.
Can you give examples of those poor capitalist countries?
Sure. So a good example is Haiti, where almost no one has any kind of formal employment, and millions of people live in slums, and agriculture has been destroyed, and the earthquakes that happen in Haiti are so devastating, not because they're very strong earthquakes, but because the country is too poor to have the infrastructure to build safe buildings and to be able to maintain the physical infrastructure of their society. And then, just a little bit away from Haiti, you have Cuba. You have a socialist society where even the impact of the same natural disaster in Cuba and in Haiti will be different, because Cuba has the infrastructure to be able to keep people safe and to be able to rebuild things. But Haiti, because it's been impoverished, doesn't. Another really, really useful comparison is to compare China and India. Their countries have very similar populations, population size, and India became independent at the same time China had its revolution. So you can look a few decades later and see how is independent India doing and how is socialist China doing. And when people did that in the 1970s and 80s, what they found was that India had, you know, widespread malnutrition, and China had virtually eliminated it. Many parts of India still had widespread illiteracy, and China had eliminated it at least for people of under a certain age. So, I think those kinds of comparisons are very useful.
You say China is socialist, but they are the people now finding market all over the world and producing and selling their goods.
Yeah. So yes, China in the past few decades has become more integrated into the global economy than it used to be. But if you look at the fundamental sort of structure, the fundamental way that the Chinese economy itself works, then you can see that the predominant part of it is still under social ownership, and most investment, 85% of investment in China actually, comes from the state. Crucial things like land is not privately owned in China. You can't buy and sell land as a commodity. All land is under public ownership. And agriculture is still basically managed by the state, which 40% of people in China work in. So what Lenin called the commanding heights of the economy, and as is basic industry, what Lenin called the commanding heights of the economy are still under social ownership. And if you look at the Chinese state as it exists today was created in socialist revolution in 1949. So unless that state is destroyed and the political system itself changes, then ultimately China, I would say, is a socialist society, even if it is different from many socialist societies have been.
Yeah, some of the things like you said that people have no rights over the land or some resources, put some limits on them. Those people, when they come to Canada, for example, Cuban people, when they come to Canada, when they see that people can enjoy unlimited property rights, they can have vehicles, they can have even helicopters, they can buy hotels, many buildings, run huge business. When they see that, they fall into the trap. I believe they fall into the trap and say, oh, in capitalist country, there are a lot of freedom that we don't enjoy in our country. What do you think of the impact of that?
I think that's very important to raise, and that definitely does have an important and a negative impact in socialist countries. For example, in Cuba, in the past couple decades, they've had to rely more on tourism as a part of their economy. And so you have people who are getting into the sort of private tourist business, and many of those people see North American capital. They look at North American capitalist society, and exactly the thing you described happens. They think, oh, you know, wouldn't it be great if I could be a capitalist on a much larger scale? And that is dangerous because it can create forces within a socialist society who want to get rid of the system and who want to restore capitalism. Mm-hmm. And of course, capitalism has been restored in many socialist countries, so that's a very real threat. So yeah, that's definitely a problem, and that will continue to be a problem as long as there are both capitalist and socialist countries in the world.
And also, I believe they have not completely seen the big picture of the capitalist country, right?
Yes.
Some people are rich, and many people are very poor. There's a big disparity in income, homelessness, mental health illnesses, poverty, so many issues. And the system does not allow to address those issues as well.
Yeah.
They don't get to see those pictures. They just see the outlier. Mm-hmm. And that negatively impact, I believe. So would you say, in any case, in a socialist country, there's low disparity in income. They may not have the unlimited property rights and right to luxury life, but at least everybody have reasonable life.
Yes. Yes, and I think that's a fundamental issue when you're talking about this kind of freedom. I think, at the end of the day, there is a choice between a kind of society where you are, in theory, free to own property and free to own, you know, a large business and exploit other people and free to buy and sell land and free to have, you know, an extravagant wealthy lifestyle. But in reality, most people will never, ever have that. And a society where you are not free to do those things, where you're not free to exploit the labor of others on a significant scale, where you're not free to buy and sell land and to buy and sell the basic resources that people need for your own private gain, but everyone has their basic needs in life met. And it comes down to a question of freedom for who. That's the way Lenin put it, is freedom for whom? Do we want freedom for a small minority of people to buy and sell and be rich? Or do we want the freedom of the vast majority to have decent lives?
Yeah. Even in Canada, I can see that people are not able to buy even a home for them.
No.
They have
very,
freedom,
very few people,
but there's no means to achieve that freedom. Many people cannot afford to buy a vehicle so that they can safely travel. Many people buy second-hand vehicle and risk driving on the road. So we have the freedom to buy property and sell property, but we don't have the means to achieve those freedom. Even though there's freedom, it is useless freedom. It only put a few people to enjoy the wealth and many people to sacrifice their goods for these few people.
Yes, exactly.
And these few people are privileged by their wealth and the power. They don't want to lose that privilege, and they are hammering the other people that this is the right way, we have to go on this way, and the other way, like socialism or communism, is very bad. It leaves you with poverty, and you will not have access to food, that kind of things. Like you said, in that kind of political system, you are using the resources well. You acknowledge that resources are scarce and limited, and it has to be wisely used. Acknowledging that only, sometimes you may not produce, you don't supply the market over and produce more waste while someone is starving. When you are modestly using the resources, you may have some hardship to achieve some resources, but you are not wasting. But here, yes, you are producing over the demand. Most of the things are wasted, but people in need are not able to access it. Do you agree with that?
Yes, absolutely. That's the basic functioning of capitalist society. You have overproduction, and you have waste, and you have poverty on the other side of that. You have commodities that are being produced that nobody really needs, but they've been convinced that they need because of advertising. You have an enormous amount of labor and energy actually going into advertising itself to convince people that they need things. Mm-hmm. And on the other hand, you have people who lack something that they basically and objectively do need, like housing or healthy food.
Mm-hmm. Is there any risk people trying to go forward with this path, communism or socialism path?
Of course, there are risks in that we are engaged in a struggle. We're engaged in a struggle against the forces and the people who hold power today, and they will protect their power. And you know, ultimately, we believe that the working people, the masses of the population, are more powerful if they're organized and if they're united. But anytime you're trying to take wealth and power away from those who have it and who have sort of very powerful means to protect that, political and military means to protect that, there are risks that come along with that struggle, for sure.
I mean, if a person thinks that, oh, we chose a communist party and we will not be able to revert back, if they think that way, how do you address those concerns?
Well, that's gets to the fundamental, one of the fundamental differences between the Communist Party and other political parties. We could conceivably see like communists participating in a government elected within the current system at some point in the future. But ultimately, we do want a qualitative break. We want to change the basic way that the system functions. Mm-hmm. So, yes, after a certain point, there won't be a way to go back, but I mean, in our perspective, it's not in the interest of the overwhelming majority of people. If we were able to have a successful socialist revolution and create that new system, it would not be in the interest of the overwhelming majority of people to try to reverse that system and go back to capitalism.
Mm-hmm. Some people that are concerned about communism may be reluctant to vote, but they have to understand that even if they select a communist party, the communism is not going to be established within one term.
No, of course not. It's a long historical period of struggle. Even if we had a successful socialist revolution, there are, you know, generations of change that need to happen. And in many socialist countries, even sort of the socialization of the economy has been a gradual thing. And so, you know, maybe the first stage, land is brought into public ownership and, you know, foreign-owned industry. And then maybe large industry that's owned domestically. And then, you know, in many socialist countries, you can still own a small business. Mm-hmm. In Cuba, for example, many people own small businesses.
Okay.
There are changes that need to be made, but those changes can be made in a gradual way and in a way that produces the least possible sort of friction in society.
For example, now we have increasing concern about public sectors being privatized.
Right.
While this is the situation, choosing a communist party may help advocate returning that privatized public businesses to the public.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. That that is one of an absolutely crucial issue, the privatization and undermining of public services. And we would want not just to restore what has been privatized, but in the case of education or healthcare, we want to expand what is publicly covered. And that's something we believe can be done immediately. That's not something that we need to wait for, you know, a change in the change of the nature of society to happen. We could have fully public higher education, for example, in Canada right now, and we do advocate that.
But for that, to make the change, you need voting power.
Yes.
The other thing I wanted to point out, that communist is not going to establish communism immediately if they are elected. First thing, they have to go towards socialism.
Yes.
And then they have to move forward communism. So people always have an opportunity to oppose their view or promote their view. They are not risking by choosing communism as they think.
No, I wouldn't say so.
And also, all the parties are now taking capitalist positions. In that case, we also have to include a communist view. Isn't that?
Absolutely, I agree.
So for that, it is better for people to choose Communist Party as well, so that the capitalist views are opposed with communist view, and we can get a balanced view, or we can get multiple perspective, and our political decisions are well informed.
Absolutely.
That's right. Okay, thanks for the interview.
Thanks for doing this.
It is very informative, and it will help people understand who put the people first and who hold the values that are helpful to strengthen their well-being.
Yep. Thank you.
Thank you.